There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines and top debate. This is The Grill, live from Barasti with Tom Urquhart on DubaiEye1038.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Grill, broadcasting live from the Barasti rooftop garden down here at Le Meridien Minas Iahi. If you are in the vicinity, do come and say hi. We have got plenty of sport to serve you up in the next 3 hours in the presence of some live guests and some great panellists coming your way in just a few moments' time. And talking of live sport, England action in Australia. They're playing a Cricket Australia 11. We'll give you a Stumps report on that and Stumps in New Zealand as they continue their series against the West Indies. European Rugby Champions Cup and Challenge Cup action for you before we go off air. There'll also be the culmination of the Amiga Ladies Masters here in Dubai. So that's going to be, we have all the latest from Aubrey Greenfield live from the Emirates Golf Club a little later on. We've also got the Joburg Open and the QBE shootout ongoing in golf. Plus in football, Bayern against Frankfurt at 6:30 this evening. That's part of a full schedule in the Bundesliga. Before that, we got West Ham against Chelsea, early kickoff in the Premier League. All the goals for that one as and when they happen, and there will be goals, I'm sure. And Getafe against Eibar is underway over in Spain. About 5 minutes into that, no goals as yet. We'll have all the latest from the world of sport, and as always, if you'd like to have your say, you know how to do so. You can text us right now on 4001. Equally, you can have your say on Twitter at DubaiEyeSport. This is The Grill, live from the Barasti rooftop garden.
Let's go!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on DubaiEye 103.8.
Joining us live on the rooftop garden, it is ARN's head of sport, a man who knows his sport, and he's here with us to talk sport over the next 3 hours, Chris McCarty.
Very good afternoon, Tom. Very, very good afternoon to the listeners, and yeah, it's a busy old day of sporting action. There always is on a Saturday afternoon. Really looking forward to the early kickoff in the English Premier League. West Ham taking on Chelsea. David Moyes searching for a big result. He has he's done well against champions in previous years, has David Moyes, whenever he's taken his clubs up against the reigning champs. So expecting a good game this afternoon, West Ham against Chelsea. That one getting underway at 4:30.
That's Chris McCarty, a former Yahoo and Sport 360 man. Alongside him, former Rangers, former West Ham and former Norwich star, the one and only Dale Gordon. Flash is with us throughout proceedings. Good to have you on board.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Nice to have you.
Yes, absolutely. I've been drafted from the reserves after a few weeks off.
Not at all,
Well, I've been talking to Glasgow Rangers about the job. I mean, every ex-Glasgow Rangers player has actually been talking to him about the job. So I'm thinking about taking my good Scott here, my good friend here, Mr. McCarty, who's an Aberdonian, Sports Aberdeen, as my assistant. And of course, it's you, Tom. I'd like to take you as long as my ball boy.
Yeah, no problem at all. I'm more than happy to do that. The less responsibility, the better, really, for me.
That's how you like it.
Would you, are you okay with assistant, or would you want to be goalkeeping coach?
I'll happily take the assistant coach job, because the money that Rangers would probably pay me would far exceed what I'm currently being paid at Dubai 103.8. So I'll happily take the assistant coach job, Tom.
Let's get to the football. As I said, one underway, Getafe against Eibar in the La Liga. Early kickoff there, 7:20 on the clock. No goals in that one. We're keeping an eye on the big one there, West Ham against Chelsea. It's the London derby. Early kickoff in the Premier League. Let's get some team news for you. Let's talk to the, let's get the West Ham team news first from a former West Ham man. Dalo, what has Mr. Moyes gone with?
Well, Mr. Moyes, I would keep the same lineups he did last week against Manchester City, but there's been a couple of little dropouts as well. Adrian holds his place in goal, which is a little bit surprising. Has been getting there. Was he back in the England fold? But he's been left out, and Adrian has earned his gloves in goal there. Rice also drops out, the young lad who's done a great job over the last couple of weeks. Winston Reid comes back in. Ogbeon, Zabaleta, Nobo, Obiang and Cresswell on the left-hand side of the five. And then you've got Arnautovic on the right-hand side. He'd come back into the fold as well after missing out at the Manchester City game. I think, obviously, him playing at home, I think David Moyes has looked at him for a little bit more invention as West Ham go forward. Lanzini, the little magician in midfield, just playing behind. Antonio is up top as well, moves from the right-hand side up top. And then Mazuka on the left-hand side. So he's looking, obviously, to try to get, let's be honest with you, Tommy, he hasn't got the 3 points he's obviously wanting to get, obviously coming back in as West Ham manager against a very, very strong Chelsea side.
No Andy Carroll, no Chicharito. He's definitely mixing things up, isn't he?
He certainly is. He's without both of those. Chicharito's still injured, Tom, and I'm sure, no question, if he was fit, he would start. He is someone, of course, that can get a goal out of absolutely anything and out of nothing, sorry. And West Ham today, like the Manchester City game, I would imagine they will concede an awful lot more possession to Chelsea. Chelsea will dominate the ball, but there were shoots of optimism, I think, for West Ham in that game against Manchester City. For the opening 45 minutes, it wasn't pretty, it was backs against the wall, but they were much more disciplined, much more organised than what we saw against Everton a couple of weeks back. And I'm starting to see now David Moyes, what he and his coaching staff, Billy McKinley, Stuart Pearce, are doing on the training field, and I've got a sneaky feeling, I've got a feeling that West Ham will get a result. I'm not going to say they're going to win today, but I've got a feeling they'll get a result.
I think they're fitter, Chris, more than anything. I think that players obviously come out into the press, social media, as we know how strong that is in the game at the moment, and I think that players have come out and said they're working a lot harder in training, that maybe double sessions have been put on as well, and they responded to the manager, and I think you saw that against City last week, and obviously after a good performance but still a defeat, he'll be looking to obviously bounce back and try to get that 3 points they really want.
One thing I've noticed from a fan's perspective is he seems to be getting glimpses of the best out of Arnautovic. Arnautovic has been a poor signing. He was a poor signing over the summer. He wasn't playing for Slaven Bilic. He seems to be playing for the new manager.
Well, David Moyes has said publicly and privately that Marko Arnautovic needs to do more, certainly out of possession, and I always felt that was his Achilles heel. Mark Hughes, I thought, managed him well, got an awful lot more out of him going the opposite way, because there's no doubt about it, he's an enigmatic talent, isn't he? He is someone that can make things happen if he fancies it. The key with Marko Arnautovic is there's an awful lot of weekends that he doesn't quite fancy it. If you hit him early, if you smash him early, he can go missing a little bit. But today, he's obviously done something in training this week, and I'm totally with Dale. David Moyes, there's an onus on West Ham at the London Stadium to go out and be a little bit more expansive than what they were against Manchester City. And whilst I still expect Chelsea to dominate the majority of possession, there's enough in that West Ham team for me to suggest that they'll cause Chelsea one or two problems this afternoon. And I'm maybe sticking my head on my neck on the chopping board saying that I fancy them to take something from this game, but they'll need to keep it tight. If they can do that and get this game into the latter stages, then I do expect West Ham to take something.
I just also think it's important that they do get that win moving into the festive period and then going into the transfer window, which opens up. And I think David Moyes will no doubt be looking to obviously try and strengthen certain areas. So he's given everybody the opportunity to react to him coming into as a manager and to show that they want to work for David Moyes and play for him.
Let's hear from David Moyes now in front of the West Ham faithful at the London Stadium a little later on. How has he approached this game?
I think they'll get behind the team. I think that's what West Ham supporters do. I wouldn't expect anything else. And actually, I think the position we're in, they know how much we need them. We'll try and do everything we can to give them something to shout about. But I also hope that they understand the realistic challenge we've got against a team such as Chelsea as well.
Those are the thoughts of David Moyes. He takes on Chelsea this afternoon. Early kickoff, 4:30 kickoff here in the UAE, 12:30 back in the UK. Let's get some team news from Antonio Conte. How's he gone on his trip to the East End?
Is that me or Antonio?
I think you, actually.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll come to me
we
then.
We haven't got Antonio yet.
All right, okay.
I tell you, your Italian's great.
My Italian is as good as Antonio Conte's English, Dale. Let me tell you, listen, Chelsea's starting lineup, they have matched up today, it appears to me anyway, with West Ham. It's a back three, Cesar Azpilicueta, Andreas Christensen, who I'm a huge fan of, had a wonderful loan spell at Borussia Mönchengladbach, the son of Jesper Christensen, and I'm looking at you, Dale, the former Rangers goalkeeper. Gary Cahill will captain the side on that left-hand side of the back three. Then comes the midfield five, the two wing-backs, David Zappacosta on the right-hand side, Marcus Alonso, such a shrewd signing for Antonio Conte, left wing back. The midfield three, the two anchors, N'Golo Kante and Tumio Bakayoko. Cesc Fabregas will be asked to be the little metronome in the middle of the park. Eden Hazard will then be the man to make things happen in the final third for Chelsea. He is the man that will link up with the number nine, Alvaro Morata. A strong team that for Chelsea. I guess the other big team news is that David Luiz once again misses out on the matchday squad. Some speculation that he could well be on his way come January. There's been a falling out there, and David Luiz's future is well, it's in doubt, and he could well be on the way come the new year.
Hazard's hit a rich vein of form at
the
moment.
He has, yeah, he's been class as Eden Hazard. I know Antonio Conte has been talking about him and about what he needs to do in order to get into the top tier, if you will, alongside your Ronaldos, your Messis. Some would argue that Neymar's elevated himself to there, but yeah, he's come into a rich vein of form in recent weeks, Tom. And we talk so eloquently and we talk often, don't we, Dale, about Kevin De Bruyne, about being him being the best player in the Premier League on his day. Eden Hazard is right up there as well. He can go left, he can go right. He's a beautiful dribbler of the ball. And probably the only thing you could level against him is he doesn't score enough goals.
No, he doesn't, but he, like you said, Chris, you know, he's proved over the recent weeks that he's been getting on the scoreboard yet again. And I think this is the massive game for Chelsea. I think if you look at the United and the City game, which kicks off tomorrow, you know, Antonio Conte will be looking at this particular game to think, right, look, either way, that one of the teams are going to drop points. Mm. So this is our ideal opportunity now to go against a West Ham team that, you know, albeit are struggling, you know, they are at home. We know the flaws that they've shown in the London Stadium over not just recent weeks, but over since they've actually moved into their new premises. And I think that Chelsea on the back, I think they went there last year, they beat them 2-1 as well, away from home. So they'll go there full of confidence as well. And after a little bit stop-start sort of game against Atletico Madrid during midweek, you know, they'll be looking to bounce back and get 3 points domestically.
And the other thing to point out as well, and this is good reading, I know you're a West Ham fan, Dale's a former West Ham player. West Ham have got the worst defence in the Premier League. They've conceded 32, and that's a long way off. I think Stoke have conceded 30. They're the only two teams that have conceded 30 or more, 32 goals in 15 games. That's an average of more than two goals.
I think Billy Bonds and Alvin Martin are on the bench.
how much?
Tom would know about Billy Bonds and Alvin Martin.
How much could West Ham be doing with those two? And you expect, that's one thing you expect with Moise Dale. You expect him to make them that little bit more difficult to play against, and defensively you expect them
not to. Yeah, hence the reason why he's brought Stuart Pearce in. You know, Stuart Pearce is a former player as well. We know all about Stuart Pearce as a player, you know, his mental strength, his physicality, and obviously he'll be working with the defence to make sure they're organised, you know, day in, day out on that training pitch. And a game against Chelsea, which, you know, you look at it, I think Creswell, for me, is a little bit more solid in that area as well with Zabaleta. People have questioned Zabaleta, whether or not we've seen the best of him, and I personally think we have. So it'll be interesting to see if Chelsea would exploit that down the right-hand side of West Ham, because obviously with Arnautovic as well, will he be willing to put a shift in to back a Zabaleta up as well? And it'll be a little test for both sides. I think Creswell is a bit more solid on that side. I think Lanzini is important to West Ham today because they just think they need to get him on the ball. He's like a Coutinho for me for Liverpool, and if he ticks as well, and Antonio, you know, with his power, and he'll close people down up front as well. I need that little bit of physical presence up front, but I just think Chelsea just got too much for them.
Let's hear from the Chelsea manager as we head to the break. Straight after that, we turn our attention to basketball, both over in the States, globally, and here in the UAE. Stay tuned for that one. Not before, though, we've heard the thoughts of Antonio Conte.
I repeat, West Ham is a good team, and to play away against Huddersfield is not simple. United lost the game. Manchester City struggled a lot against them. In England, they are not easy game, but we have to try in every game. We have to try to win. We have to try to do our best because this league is very tough, and especially because there is a team that is doing an extraordinary path.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Yeah, live action from the Premier League coming your way in just a little while. Players on the pitch warming up ahead of the early kickoff in the Premier League, West Ham against Chelsea. Game underway over in Spain at the moment. Chris McCarty's got eyes on that one for me.
Yes, Getafe against Eibar. Two hugely supported clubs in this part of the world. I'm probably not so sure that is the case, Tom. But it's Getafe 0, Eibar 0. Getafe from the suburbs of Madrid. Just to give you a little bit of background on who they are. 0-0 after 20 minutes. Don't expect a goal fest. And it's probably the last time we'll give that a mention for the afternoon.
Sol DX. Be ongoing here in the UAE at the moment, shining a light and bringing attention to, well, a variety of cultures, hip-hop lifestyle, sport, amongst others. In fact, that's where we're going to turn our attention to now, because Neil Mayer is in town. He spent 16 years in the top league of basketball, in the former NBA coach. He's here in Dubai, coached with six different teams during his tenure. Prior to joining the Clippers, he was with the Portland Trailblazers. Blazers for 5 seasons, working positions ranging from assistant coach to scout and video coordinator. Worked in a similar capacity with the Denver Nuggets before his stint in Portland, where he also served as camp director of the Nuggets youth camps held during the off-season. He got his NBA start when he held the position of assistant video coordinator and camp director for the San Antonio Spurs in 94, served as head coach for the Clippers' entry into the 2006 Las Vegas Summer League, and enjoys coaching and teaching internationally during the off-seasons here in Dubai as part of the Seoul DXB celebrations. He's here with us live on the grill. Good afternoon to you, Neil.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good to have you on board for the next little while, and great to have your thoughts on what's going on here regionally, but also what's going on globally. Let's start with the regional thing. Well, let's start with the first reason of why you are here. Seoul DXB, tell us your experiences down there. Enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, this year is a new partnership with the NBA and Nike, and they have a Seoul DBX Nike court that is at the event. So I've been here the last couple of days taking part in those activities, running some coaching clinics, seeing some of the talent, as well as we brought the NBA trophy here for fans and guests to see.
In terms of the interest for NBA, I mean, I know it's a global brand, it's a global product. Have you been pleasantly surprised by the amount of interest here in Dubai in the Middle East for NBA?
Yeah, I mean, the Middle East is a key market for us, and the fan affinity here is growing all the time, and it's an area that we're looking to expand in and get involved with more people seeing and having a chance to touch and feel the NBA through our interactive events, our fan zones. We're in the process of evaluating opening up NBA stores and cafes globally. So a lot of different ways to interact here.
In terms of the way that NBA is managed and has been managed in the past back in the United States, have they been a victim of their own success within the States? They've taken their eye off the ball in terms of the opportunities globally for NBA in the past?
Well, no, I think, you know, the NBA is growing in the U.S., but now it's to the point where there's such an infinity internationally, and we have 108 international players this year in the NBA. 64 of those are from the Europe region, you know, but along with that, we just are excited about the opportunities to get more players from around the world to hopefully eventually make their way there.
You mentioned international players. We'll maybe get to Ben Simmons in a moment because I know he's doing wonderful things with the 76ers this season. You talk there, though, Neil, about the growth of NBA in terms of restaurants and cafes. What about elite academies? We were talking off air that the NBA wants to create these little hubs around the world to try and nurture new talent. What about here in the Middle East? What is the future for NBA in this part of the world?
Yeah, I mean, our academy programs launched just in January. We currently have an elite academy in Australia. We have other elite academies in India, China, Africa. Just launched one in Mexico. And the next region for us is the Middle East, and looking to find a way to grow talent here and find the best players and groom them to potentially hopefully make it to the NBA, but also maybe be a part of their national team and raise the level of basketball in this region.
Give us an idea then. Elite academies, it certainly sounds wonderful. What is the mechanics? What is the mechanisms within that enable the kids to, I guess, fulfill their full potential?
Yeah, I mean, for us, you know, as the NBA, we go out, scout, evaluate the talent, and find those players that have the potential. We invite them and bring them to the academy where they not only play basketball and get taught, you know, by NBA coaches, but they also get an opportunity to get their education, get, you know, the nutritional value, strength and conditioning, training, all those things that encompass that full package that can give them the opportunity to succeed.
And what's the end game from that, from an NBA perspective? Is it to then flood the league, the franchises with these players who have been honed by the NBA, or what's the end game?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to flood the NBA with these players, but I think what it does do, it's going to raise the profile of basketball in those countries. It's going to target some of those key players that could eventually either go to the U.S. and play in university or somewhere around the world, maybe go play in one of the other top leagues in the world, in Europe, or China, or anywhere. Or hopefully for us, we'll get a few that do make their way to the NBA and help raise the profile of the NBA in that country.
I want to get both of your thoughts on this one, if I can, because one thing that's really surprised me in recent times is when we talk about demographics in NBA, demographics for basketball. Basketball events here, we talk about it often with Ross Christ here on the radio, not just in Dubai, not just the UAE, but over in Lebanon in the region. Who's going to the games? Filipinos. Is that a massive market? Is that a market that's been cracked, do you think, at the moment?
It's a huge market, undoubtedly, and I know the NBA want to tap into that a little bit more, and that is perhaps why we've got a huge Filipino community in this part of the world, Tom. That will, I guess, be one of the reasons why the NBA is looking to this part of the world. It is huge. NBA is huge amongst the Lebanese population as well. And let's be frank, it's big amongst the Western population as well. You know what, me as a Scot, I follow the NBA very closely, and it's great that we've got the likes of these ideas being discussed right now. And the Filipino community is definitely one, Neil, that you guys want to be tapping into a lot more.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have junior NBA and NBA programs in the Philippines because there is such an affinity. We've had an NBA preseason game in that region. And obviously just being at the Seoul DBX over the weekend, watching the Filipino team play there, they had a great team that was very competitive. And throughout the region when I've been here, we've had a chance to work with the Filipino community.
We talk football quite a lot, soccer, week in, week out. One of the things that we often talk about in the Premier League, the English Premier League, one of their sort of big demands is to try and get an Asian player, an Indian-based player, into the Premier League to open up that market for them. Is it similar for NBA, for basketball? Have we had Filipino players knocking on the door of NBA teams?
Yeah, I mean, we've had players from the Asian region knocking on the door. We've had some China. We had Yao Ming come in. Yeah. We've had some other players. And I think the thing we've learned is not only is it good for the game, but it also, when you have a player from that particular country representative, it gives those fans in that country someone to follow, and it really raises the affinity of the NBA in that region. I mean, with Dirk Nowitzki coming from Germany. Yeah. Germany became a huge market for us. So there's a correlation there.
And then we're seeing Ben Simmons from Australia as well, making hay and making a name for himself. As I say, we'll get to him in just a second. I want to just stick, if we can, don't want to put you too much on the spot here, Neil, but how realistic is it that we're going to see an elite academy in this part of the world? Maybe not in the short term, but medium, long term?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's real realistic. I mean, right now we're coming into this region. It's key for us. We're starting from the grassroots level with some of our junior NBA programs. We're having conversations around the region to bring a junior NBA basketball league, which is a youth league for kids 11 and 12 years old that play under NBA team brands. We currently have one in Bahrain, a partnership there with the Menomonee Basketball Club. We had one in Tel Aviv with Maccabi Tel Aviv. So we're looking to start at the grassroots level, and then once we move from there, we can move to the basketball schools and elite academies in this region.
Now, I've been privy, and we've heard rumors. There's been numerous stories. We know a number of individuals who have been involved at high level talks on this. It is always the old adage about bringing a game over here, whether it be an off-season match, an exhibition. The Dubai Arena is a stadium that should be complete 2019. I know there's been some suggestion once again NBA teams could come on over here. Is that a realistic possibility, Neil? Could we see an NBA teams come over here, two franchises, whether it be an exhibition, and take to the court?
Yeah, I mean, we look to evaluate in all our markets to bring the NBA games, preseason, regular season, to the regions, because I think give the fans the opportunity to touch and feel it. And I think with this region being such a key market, once we've developed the grassroots and the business infrastructure, I definitely think it's an opportunity for us to bring a preseason game to this region and give fans here a chance to touch and feel the NBA.
Now, I know you're based out of London. I'm sure you watch an awful lot of games. It is your bread and butter. Talk to us about the season thus far. I've been intrigued by a couple of storylines. I think Kyrie Irving and certainly the Boston Celtics. But what have you made? Who's impressed you? What is the overall feeling ahead of, or what you've made of, the opening few weeks of the season?
Yeah, I mean, there was so much change this summer throughout the league with players' movement, and you speak of Kyrie Irving, who's moved to Boston and having a great season. He had a great performance again last night against the San Antonio Spurs. Manu Ginobili, though, hit a three-pointer at the buzzer to end up beating him. But Brad Stevens does a great job there. I mean, Kristaps Porzingis in New York is having a great season. And then you got Giannis Antetokounmpo from Greece, who's playing at MVP level. And then you have your staples as LeBron and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant that are doing great things.
And what about LeBron? Let's talk about him. I continue to hear rumors that he's destined for the Los Angeles Lakers next year. What are you making of his form in the opening stages of this year? And give us some insight. Give us some maybe some insider trading. Is he going to head off to LA?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, he started out this, well, the Cavaliers started out the season a little bit slow this year, but they've gone, I think, 13 in a row now, and he's playing at an unbelievable clip right now. I think he's playing the best in the league. He seems like he's on a mission to, you know, try to get another championship in Cleveland. You know, but I think, you know, when he becomes a free agent, he has the choice to go where he wants. You know, L.A. obviously is a destination that is very intriguing. You know, I happened to be working for the Cavaliers when he left and went to Miami, so I've been around it firsthand, and you just never know what they're going to do, and that's the great thing about free agency.
Give us an insight into what that decision meant. I know he's back, and it's water under the bridge now, but give us a semblance of what it was like being in that city when he announced that he was taking his talents to South Beach and heading off to Miami.
Yeah, I mean, from a franchise perspective, when you have the best player in the world, and you've done everything you can to try to you know, make him happy and want him to stay. But I think it came down to an opportunity that he felt, you know, I want to go somewhere else. I've been here my whole life. I want to go see what I can do somewhere else. And he did. He went and won some championships, and he came back and won another one.
The fact that he came back and won the championship with Cleveland, does that mean if he was to decide to head to LA, and again, it's all, you know, conjecture, it's all speculation at this moment in time, but if he was to decide, I'm heading off to California, I'm going to go and join the Lakers, would the Cav fans accept the decision a lot more than perhaps they did a few years back when he headed off to Miami?
Yeah, I think you know, probably, I think he was a young player at that time, some to speak, you know, and he left, and he maybe felt he didn't handle that the right way when he left, you know, but I think he's older now. I think, you know, depending how he did it and everything, you know, it could be a positive thing, but, you know, it is his hometown, and I'm sure people there would be very disappointed to see him leave. I mean, not only is he great for the city to help generate revenue and maintain businesses just because he's with the Cavs, but he's a good person, and he means a lot to that community.
Undoubtedly one of the, if not the biggest poster boy that the NBA has. Let's look at the other spectrum. Let's look at the young boys, the young men that are making names for themselves. I mentioned them twice now. Ben Simmons, the Aussie, he is just having a remarkable start to this campaign. Just how good is he, Neil, in your opinion, and how good can he become?
Well, I mean, he's having an unbelievable year. He's definitely going to probably be the rookie of the year. You know, unfortunately, had some injuries early on, but he's bounced back, and he's put Philly, you know, right in the competition there, and is playing an unbelievable game. You know, he's definitely got one of those potentials that he can be a longtime all-star, and who knows, maybe an MVP.
And I guess that's the great thing with him as well. The fact he's Australian, he's one of the poster boys for showing that the NBA is now increasingly becoming international. You've got your scouts out there. You don't have to necessarily go through the college system. You can be spotted, and you can make it in what is undoubtedly the number one basketball league in the world.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, as I said earlier, I mean, we have, you know, 108 players from over 40 countries, and, you know, just to see, it's a quarter of the league now, and it's changed the level of the game and the style of the game. There's not that post-up game much anymore. It's more transition, three-point shots, mobile bigs that are doing a lot of good things. And with young players that are coming in, it makes it really exciting.
So we'll get your thoughts, if I can, on coaching per se, because with basketball having been your life, with it having been your bread and butter for the last 20 years or so in terms of coaching, with the advances of sports science that we're seeing, not just in basketball, but in all sport at the moment, and the fact that you can track every single moment and every single motion of all the players at the moment, is there a risk, and have you seen this evolution during your coaching career, is there a risk that we can sort of forget that the players are human at the end of the day and let them just express themselves?
Yeah, I mean, you know, now with statistics and all the health and nutrition and sleep mechanics and everything that's out there, you know, you want them to perform at the highest level, but also, like you say, they have to be human. They have to be able to perform. And you know, we got to try to utilize these tools to, you know, try to limit injuries and everything. But at the end of the day, sometimes as a coach, it has to be the gut feel of things. It can't always be looking at the numbers. And same with scouting. Using statistics and analytics are great. But as a scout, when you're looking at players, you also have to you know, use that gut feel. Does this guy have a chance to be an NBA player or a starter or an MVP type player? And you know, technology only helps, but you gotta keep that human touch as well.
So I suppose, you know, we're not going to turn our back on sports science, or we're not going to turn our back on the technology. But as you say, it's retaining that sort of human instinct, that gut feeling. That's what's been lost in the game at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it needs to be brought back up a little, because there's also that personal level human communication and relationship stuff that if you don't have that and you don't communicate with your players, it makes it hard to succeed. I mean, if you look at a coach like Phil Jackson, you know, he was a coach that used, you know, books and quotes and video clips and communication to manage Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe, Dennis Rodman, to make a team gel and win championships. And that piece you have to always have.
It's interesting. We just had the rugby sevens here, and we were talking to one of the coaches, a former coach of the Fiji team. He spent a bit of time over with the NFL franchises, also over in the NBA as well, sharing experiences, sharing knowledge as well. Again, is that something that basketball can learn from? Is that happening at the moment across sporting boundaries?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. It definitely is. There, I mean, it's starting to be more cross sports, yeah. But within sport for sure, you know, there's a lot of collaboration between other leagues around the world, other coaches around the world. You're seeing more international coaches coming to the NBA and being assistants. And, you know, David Blatt, who, you know, spent some time in the Middle East, he was with the Cavaliers for a while. But it's really an interesting way to transfer knowledge, coaches from everything. But now it's a good point to look at the opportunities to work with other sports leagues to see what they're doing and how it can adapt to what you're doing.
It's undoubtedly an exciting time for the NBA. I have noticed a sea change. Certainly in the last 12, 18 months, there seems to be a lot more talks. NBA are a lot more prevalent here in the Middle East. Another question for you, Neil, and this is one that will be asked time and time again. We're seeing the NFL focus on London. There's some talk that maybe in the next 2-3 years we could see a franchise come to London. Is that something, do you feel, in the realms of possibility for the NBA, that they may well look out with the US borders to create a franchise to get that international, that global feel that much bigger in the coming years?
Yeah, I mean, we're always evaluating how to grow our product and grow the game and work with our partners around the world to do that. You know, the dynamics of the travel and everything and the number of games that are played in basketball makes it a little more difficult, you know, finding what that mix is, whether it's a franchise in Europe or a division in Europe. You know, those are all things that the NBA evaluates. And when the time is right, I think there is going to be an opportunity in the future for it, but it may be 10, 15 years down the road. You just don't know.
Last one from me on this. NBA right now. Oh.
Just going to break in very quickly there, because we've got news of a goal. It doesn't come from La Liga. It comes from the Premier League. And Armand Dale-Gordon's been watching this one.
Tom, West Ham are certainly blowing their bubbles. It's after 5 minutes of early pressure from West Ham. Put the goalkeeper, Quarter, under a little bit of pressure early on in the game. And it was Arnautović who actually opened the scoring for West Ham. He played 1-2 with Lanzini. I mentioned about him being important to West Ham this afternoon. Picked the ball up on the right-hand side. Played the ball in a little 1-2, Arnautović dropped his right shoulder, opened the angle up for him, and curled it into Courtois' right-hand post, just inside the post. He ran off. That was a good part of it. We know what he's like. They'll go 1-0 up. Arnautović has obviously got a little bit excited, because West Ham don't score too many goals, Tom. And he runs into the crowd, throws himself into the crowd, and picks up a yellow card after 6 minutes. We will wait to see how important that yellow card will be later in the game. But at the moment, West Ham fully deserve 1-0 up.
It takes intent as well, because you've got to run about 500 metres to get to the crowd at London Stadium.
Listen, I'll be happy to just run 5 metres.
We'll get more from that game. Keep an eye on that one for us. We're in conversation with the former NBA coach Neil Mayer is here alongside us at the moment. And we just want to talk about very quickly about grassroots here, because we know that the school system, the college system in the US is second to none in scouting, developing and bringing on talent. Again, is that something that needs to be replicated here in the region and things to take basketball to the next level?
Yeah, I mean, and it's something we are evaluating through our junior NBA programs, which can be leagues, NBA fit, different things, you know, will be key in this region. Yeah. I think not only from a basketball to raise the profile, get more kids dribbling the basketball, but also from a healthy and lifestyle perspective, just eating properly, exercising, and getting out and being active is really important to do.
Before West Ham scored the goal and interrupted me there, Neil, I was going to ask the question whether you feel NBA right now is in the best place it's ever has been. In all the years of NBA, I know David Stern did a wonderful job in growing the game, the Michael Jordans. There was a real period where NBA just seemed to be absolutely everywhere. It was cross-bordering, it was into lifestyle, it was in the hip-hop as well. We know that, that's why Soul DXB is such a wonderful fit for it. But right now, is NBA the healthiest it's ever been?
Yeah, I mean, I think the NBA with its new TV contract, with its TV partners, and then, you know, David Stern, when he took over this league, we weren't even on national TV. Now we're in 200-plus countries around the world in 50 different languages, and he was the man who led the NBA to where it is, and then... His predecessor, Adam Silver, has taken over, and with the new young influx of young talent and players that are exciting, and the Golden State Warriors, and you know, the Antetokounmpos, with the Milwaukee Bucks, and just the style of play, up-tempo, fun, exciting. The fans are loving it. The fans around the world are getting a chance to watch it on NBA League Pass, through social media, on YouTube. So it's all great things for us, and I think we're only moving in the right direction, and as we grow globally, it'll continue to be an exciting game.
I'm talking for us all here when I say I think we're all traditionalists. I think we're all old men now.
Dale is.
Other than Dale, we've all got grey hairs, one or two grey hairs. Got to ask you about stockpiling. This idea of super teams now, we're seeing the Golden State Warriors, my goodness, not only have they got Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, the Splash Brothers, throwing Kevin Durant into the mix, you know, Iguodala as well. It's an unbelievable sight. Is that good for NBA, do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think, the players are moving around and doing everything within the rules and what they're allowed to do, and the teams are doing what they can within the rules. And I think the NBA, you'll see, it's an up and down thing. Teams go through phases, and I think right now we're currently going through a phase where teams have had the ability to stockpile some players and create kind of super teams. But I think it's exciting for the game, but I think it also puts other teams on check, and they have to find a way to be competitive and raise their standards. So ultimately, I don't think it's bad. I think it just makes for a good story, and we'll see how it plays out in the future.
Neil's here as part of the Seoul DXB activities that are going on down at the Dubai Design District down at D3. If you want to find out more, it's SeoulDXB.com or at SeoulDXB, or use the hashtag, of course, for exactly the same. One more night, I think. Any rain forecast for tonight or not?
Let's hope not. I'm heading over to watch the finals today, and then give out the prize. The MVP is going to win tickets to come to the London game in January, so it's going to be an exciting evening.
So you're back down there this evening.
Yep.
If people want to come on down, it's free to do so. Get yourself involved. As I said, all the details are on there. You've been impressed with the setup down there?
Oh, it's amazing. It's my first time coming to this event, and just seeing all the different lifestyle booths and all the different musicians and activities going on. It's been great. And then Nike basketball court and games there have been exciting as well.
And it's not everyone that comes out to the UAE and gets to go back with stories to tell everyone about rain in the desert.
Yeah. That's true. I'm going to go back to rainy and cold London tomorrow.
Listen, mate, it's been great having you. Thanks so much indeed for all your time, all your insights. It's been really kind for you to give some time to us. I know you're a busy, busy man, and you've got plenty to look forward to down at Seoul DXB throughout the rest of the evening. But thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more sport.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Right, let's get some news update from the live sport ongoing at the moment. All eyes on the Premier League. Early kick-off London derby. Chris McCarty's got the latest for us.
Indeed I do. Yes, Dale Gordon's been keeping a very close eye on this one. He's a happy chappy at this moment in time. That's for the West Ham. Currently lead the defending champions Chelsea by a goal to nil. 17 minutes on the clock, and it was a good goal as well. Marko Arnautovic, the man that we discussed at length at the top of the show, returning to the starting lineup, and he's repaid David Moyes in kind, because it was he that got on the end. A little 1-2 with Manuel Lanzini into the far corner, and as Dale rightly pointed out, he got a bit overzealous with the celebration. He's picked up a booking, and it's all got a little bit heated there. I think Chelsea have just booked, I think it's Marcus Alonso who's just picked up a booking for a little... there's nothing in that, is there?
Nothing in that at all, Chris. No, I think that Chelsea are struggling to get a foothold in the game, really, and the only real thing, the threat they've had as of yet is Morata, who burst into the penalty area in the West Ham area and just dropped his shoulder, just dragged the ball how he does so cleverly, and went down a little bit too easy. It was never he claimed it was a penalty, but I think he was the only person who actually player actually claimed for it. So Chelsea, I think Antonio Conte will be a little bit frustrated with his side's opening sort of like 18 minutes of this game, but David Moyes, after they scored the goal, you could see the delight in his face that you know, it was an outstanding goal. It really was. I mean, it was the so-called West Ham way, you know, the little 1-2s on the edge of the box, and an excellent finish from Arnautovic. But like I said to Tom, I think that we'll wait to see if that is going to have any effect as they go later in the game, because I think that David Moyes will be well aware of that, and then the later they go on in the game, they're still leading. I can just see that David Moyes may well make a substitution on Arnautovic, because you know how hot-headed he can be at times, and the intensity of a London derby, anything can happen.
Just interested to get your thought. I mean, we talk about the changing face of football clubs at the moment, but retaining that culture, retaining that spirit. I know that you keep an eye on the West Ham results, as you do other former clubs as well. But if you were to walk into the London Stadium tomorrow, I mean, are there any people still at the club that would have been at the club during your time there as well?
Oh, wow.
Julian Dix has been, he's been sacked.
No, well, Dixie was left back. He left with Slaven, because obviously when I was at West Ham, Slaven was part of the West Ham team there as well. And
you hear about the dinner ladies and the kit men and things like that. They've been there for ages and ages and ages. Would they sort of still be there?
The only one would be there would be Carr, Tony Carr, who was part of the West Ham Academy, and I think he's a massive part of West Ham's history. If you look at the likes of Joe Cole came through the youth ranks, Rio Ferdinand, Michael Carrick, you know, they've had a half a chance there for Chelsea, just would drop to Eden Hazard actually on his left foot, just dragged it a volley, just past the face of the 6-yard box out for a goal kick. But you know, to be honest with you, Tom, they're the only ones really who would like Tony Carr would be from the academy set up, who's probably at that club over 100 million pounds
easily. Yeah, what a job he's done. And it's interesting as well, you talk about the West Ham way. Did you feel pressure when you joined that football club to play a certain way, the fans? Because you're right to say that a number of clubs, the United way at Manchester, West Ham have always had a rich history of playing passing football. Did you feel pressure when you were there that you had to play in a certain style?
Do you know what, Chris? I think with West Ham, I felt pressure that the fact that when West Ham got into I joined them as they actually got promotion from the Championship into the Premier League, and I was their biggest signing, so that was £1 million at them all them years ago. And there's myself and Simon Webster, they signed from Charlton for £500,000. Simon unfortunately broke his leg in training, and we all know what Julian Dix is like not Stuart Pearce, but Julian Dix does love a tackle and broke Simon's leg in training. I was then left to pick up the pieces, so to speak, and feel more pressure. I actually broke down within about 8 games into my West Ham career, which was a real big pity, because while I used to love playing against West Ham when I was at Norwich City, looked forward to my time at West Ham, didn't quite work out for me. And I think over the years, if you look at the signings they've had, they've spent an awful lot of money, and I mean big money on players, big-time players that have gone there, who have picked up injury after injury after injury. It just seems to be one of them clubs that players seem to join, and they do pick up like mega injuries. And I think that has been a massive detriment to the football club moving forward. As a club and where they are at the moment, you know, I think that looking at some of the fixtures today, it's a massive game for West Ham to pick up points, and we said going into the Christmas period. But yeah, it's a pressure cooker. But it is whoever you play in the Premier League, and I think David Moyes going there with the question mark over him as well as the manager, is he able to do it at West Ham? And I think that he's slowly getting his philosophy across. And I think, you know, based on the performance so far and leading up to 25 minutes of this game, Chris, I think that he'd be absolutely delighted. Yeah. And I think that the energy levels have gone up. Like, you could see 20-25% by all the players, and they're working very, very hard for the manager.
Talk about the pressure. I mean, you talk about the West Ham way. You talk about the pressure that David Moyes is under. Obviously, comes in under a cloud. Personally, the club need a bit of a turnaround in form. But you talk about the pressure as well from the board, and we know very well that the two Davids, they like a tweet, don't they? They like going on their social media and saying a few things. But equally, I mean, 14th highest wage bill in Europe, West Ham have at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. Is it? Wow, I didn't realise that. Well, we know what Hernandez is costing them. I think that he's in the region of
140,000 pounds.
That's incredible.
He's not played enough football for them to justify that. I know he's been played out of position by Bilic, and he's picked up this injury, but he's not playing enough.
No, I think the average wage now for a Premier League footballer is way over 50,000 a week.
Yeah, 55,000. You know,
I think if you're picking up 140,000, I think Ashley Cole. Ashley Young has just signed a new contract at Manchester United, and reportedly have been in the region of about 130,000 a week. But he's playing for Manchester United.
You can understand Ashley Young. It's true, but you can understand that more playing for Manchester United than you can Javier Hernandez, Chicharito earning £140,000.
I mean, if it was Will Young, you know, from the X Factor, I mean, we'll all be.
It is frightening, the sums of money in football these days, but that is the TV rights deals, both domestic and international, has flooded the game with money. And unfortunately, and I'm a big fan of Hernandez, I would be, he's a former Manchester United player, but is he really worth £140,000 a week?
I think this is the problem that I've got. When you look at the sort of thinking that's gone into in the signings, I know what their policy was in the off-season was to go with experience or Premier League experience. So bring in your Arnautovic's, your Zabaletas, your Chicharitos, those that know what it's like to play in the Premier League and the demands therein. But if you're paying him £140,000, if you've broken club transfer records to bring him over, there is this pressure, isn't there, to play him?
Yeah, 100%.
So the pressure from the board, pressure from the fans to play him. And if I haven't got the role, because this has, I think, been the big problem, is you've got Andy Carroll and Chicharito both there, how do they play on the same pitch?
I don't think they do. I don't think they play well enough together at all. I think Andy Carroll, I've never been a fan of Andy Carroll. £35 million Liverpool Football Club paid for that striker after scoring 10 Premier League goals when they bought him. What was that, back in 2009 or 2011, I think it might have been. I forget now, but it was a number of years ago. But Andy Carroll and Chicharito don't work for me. I think a team like West Ham in the modern game, it's very difficult. You need to be not only organised, you've got to have some fine players behind you to play two front men in today's game, certainly in the Premier League. And for a club like West Ham, which right now, let's not forget, second bottom in the Premier League, a win today would still leave them 18th. They've got to be picking up victories, and it would be a brave manager, a brave decision from David Moyes to partner Chicharito and Andy Carroll. Both of them are injured. They're not involved today. He's gone with Mikel Antonio. He's gone with Arnautovic and Lanzini looking to support them. But Chicharito, I think, in a good team that's playing well, creating chances, is an absolute world beater. If you're not creating chances and you're expecting him to do a little bit more of the donkey work, get in the channels, he's not that. He's a predator goal scorer, and he needs a side that are creating chances for him to be totally at his best.
You know, you mentioned that the fact that 130,000 per week for players at West Ham, and you know, let's remember that it's a London club. They've moved to an unbelievable stadium. But it's not a Tottenham, it's not a Chelsea, it's not an Arsenal, you know. And I think that players at Spurs, if you can sort of familiarise a little bit with Spurs, they have a certain wage bill which they will eventually break. But it's like Hernandez has obviously played for Manchester United. He's been away to Real Madrid. He's played in Germany as well. I think that them, the sort of players who would like to come back into the Premier League, always want to go to the London clubs.
Mm. And you're paying a premium when you're playing for those size of clubs. In order for you or your agent to convince you you've got to sign for West Ham, you've got to pay that extra premium. Yeah. You really do.
Just want to get your thoughts on yet another quote from David Sullivan. Is there a single game that goes by without one of the Davids taking the limelight pre-match? David Sullivan has been quoted in the Guardian newspaper overnight saying this: I'm not involved in the strategy. The manager said he wanted Joseph Fonte from Southampton and Robert Snodgrass from Hull. My kids begged me not to sign them. That's why we didn't sign them. You don't say that sort of stuff to the media.
Robert Snodgrass then came out. They did sign them. That was the problem. They did go on and sign Joseph Fonte and Robert Snodgrass. And there's David Sullivan saying that his kids begged me not to sign them. And Robert Snodgrass this morning tweeting that he's seen those comments and he said, "Thank you, Mr. Chairman." Of course, Robert Snodgrass is now on loan for the season at Aston Villa. He'll never play for West Ham again, I don't think. And as for Joseph Fonte, he's been...
Another player would probably be on about 70,000, 75,000 per week as well. Snodgrass, and they've loaned him out to Aston Villa.
Huge money. Andy Carroll, six figures a week. Zabaleta and Joe Hart, in order for them to leave Man City and sign for West Ham, they'll be on huge contracts as well, Tom. Winston Reid, 18 months or so ago, was linked with Arsenal. He signed a new deal, massive money. I mean, it's frightening to think that West Ham, currently 19th, in the Premier League table, have the 14th biggest wage bill in European football. That is frightening.
Still paying Dale's fees at the moment, aren't they? You know, ambassadorial role.
I wouldn't like to say what I was on.
Listen, let's take a short break. We got the news at 5 coming away in just a few moments' time. We'll be back with more sport after that.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.